Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go, man.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Thursday to you, boys and girls. I've got one question and one question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Hey, that's all that really matters. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Coming up, another athlete learns bankruptcy the hard way. We'll get to that coming up in about 18 minutes from now. But after yesterday's trade by the Houston Rockets of Chris Paul, it begs the question, should NBA teams be this aggressive? In other words, the Houston Rockets were one of the best teams of the Western Conference last year. They have got an MVP candidate that grew into his own in James Harden, who was spectacular. The Houston Rockets were not going to lose significant pieces this offseason. You presume with more experience, with more time together, with a better understanding of the system, the Rockets should get better. That's the way it used to be. If you were the Chicago Bulls of 1986, you assumed, well, we have a star player. We've got other young players around him. We might not be champions now, but if we continue to develop and build, we will one day get there if we're good enough. And so in 1987, you should be better than 1986. And in 1988, you should be better than 1987. If you keep your core guys together and you've got a star in the middle of things, you should get better. You should grow. And so if you are the Houston Rockets coming off of last season, does it not make sense to stay the course? Does it not make sense to go, we were very good last year, we had a breakthrough, but another year in this offense, another year of perfecting things from James Harden, another year of growing, and we could be better, we should be better, we will be better. We were the 3 seed in the West. Who's to say we can't overtake San Antonio? Who's to say it's not us next year in the Western Conference Finals? But instead, what the Rockets did was they traded pieces away, like Patrick Beverley, like Lou Williams, like a pick, to bring in Chris Paul. Now, I'm not saying they gave up too much for Chris Paul, because Chris Paul is a top 10 player in the NBA, and they didn't rip apart their team to do this. But Chris Paul changes and makes you adjust on the fly what you had already done. I mean, now that team's got to relearn how to fit the pieces together. James Harden has to relearn his role. That team does not get to just build off last year and try to get better because of experience. They now have to try all over again to reboot. And ultimately, are they better than the Warriors? No. Now, nobody is right now. And maybe that's a defeatist angle to say, well, if you're not going to be the best, if you're not going to beat the Warriors, why even bother? I'm not saying everybody should just take that tact. I am wondering, though, is it smart in today's NBA to be trying to swing for the fences like this? I mean, what happens if the Rockets, this kind of blows up on them because both Chris Paul and James Harden need the ball in their hands? I know Daryl Morey likes to be aggressive, but what happens if this blows up? Are they better off? Is the ceiling of Harden and Paul better than the ceiling of what was just previously the Rockets last year? And is the ceiling of either good enough to really win a championship. I think it's a very difficult line, and you have to draw the line. And I think the Rockets are right on that line. If you're the Cavaliers, you've got extenuating circumstances. You only have LeBron guaranteed for 1 year. And once LeBron leaves, that may end up being the end of your run for a long time, maybe ever. So you've got to kind of go all in right now and swing for the fences. I understand that. And the Cavaliers also have been to 3 straight NBA finals. And the Cavaliers also beat the Warriors last year, obviously, although that was without Kevin Durant. So if you told me that the Cavaliers could simply add Carmelo Anthony just from buyout, or they can trade for Paul George and not give up Kyrie, I would say those are significant upgrades. That doesn't hurt your team. You're not relearning anything. It's not going to be a huge adjustment. You got to go out and do it. But once you get below that 3 seed in the West, I think there's like 5 teams that it makes sense to be that aggressive on. I think there's like 5 teams. Then everybody else, what are you really aiming for? And again, I hate to be defeatist in this way, because then it feels like there's 25 teams that it just doesn't matter, and why would you even pay attention, and why do you even really compete? But I kind of wonder if that's not where we are with the Warriors right now. That they are so elite, they are so good, it is not a wide open race. In the NFL, and I've talked about this before, you can make the argument right now, right here, that 3 months before the season begins, or 2 months before the season begins, there is legitimately 12 to 15 teams that could win a Super Bowl. Now, maybe that's kind of high. Maybe it's more like 6 to 8. But you know that there's a good amount of teams, at least 8 of them, that it would not be shocking if they won the Super Bowl. If I told you right now, it's the Patriots again. It's the Steelers. It's the Packers. It's the Cowboys. It's the Giants. It's the Falcons. It's the Panthers. It's the Seahawks. Those are not crazy, crazy swings. And then you have the Broncos, or the Chiefs, or the Raiders, or the Ravens. Those are not the Vikings. Those are not nuts possibilities. And I'm already at 12 teams then. In the NBA, you don't have that. It's not nearly that. It's not even close to that. And so what are you really doing this offseason? This collection of a finite amount of teams being really, really good and being aggressive is a very dangerous game to play, because ultimately, does it matter? For the Rockets, they're right on that line. If San Antonio clears out everybody and grabs Chris Paul, are they significantly better than 61 wins last year? No. I mean, 61 wins is really good. I mean, adding Chris Paul but clearing out a bunch of your other players, let's say that added 5 wins. That's 66 wins. 66 wins is a ton of wins. I mean, that is usually good to be by far the best record of the NBA, 66 victories. Does that make you better than the Warriors? The Boston Celtics. Maybe the Celtics are looking ahead to 2020. But if the Boston Celtics make a trade for Blake Griffin or Paul George and sign Gordon Hayward, are they better than the Cavs? I mean, think about that. That they would have to pull off both of those guys to feel like they're better than the Cavaliers. And then you still have to ask, are you good enough to beat the Warriors? It's interesting. We had Bobby Marks, former assistant GM for a long time with the Nets franchise, join us last week, talk about this. And he said, I just don't know if it makes sense for these teams to try to go all out right now. I mean, he goes, obviously you want to be competitive. Obviously guys don't want to sit around to lose, but you've got to be smart about what type of risks you're taking. And so there's this kind of goofy, funny, awesome, exciting NBA offseason, which, don't get me wrong, just the last couple of weeks have been fascinating. But you got to be super careful because there's like five teams that may have a shot, if everything goes perfectly, to compete for the Warriors, against the Warriors. Then everybody else, you're just kind of trying to marginally improve, but understanding that ultimately you can't get to the ultimate prize. And that's kind of bizarre. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. GLC tweets, DA, why not emphasize or coach defense in the NBA more as opposed to just trying to hoard offensive weapons? Maybe I'm too old school, but it just seems to me that in today's NBA, defense is a much too underemphasized fundamental that can be taught to the average player. See, I'll tell you what, I disagree. I think defense today is better than it has been in a long time, knowing that you can't do what you used to do. You know, the way that you break down film work, the way that all these little analytics are used, metrics are used, tendencies are studied. I mean, percentage of shots from this side, percentage of your makes from that side, percentage of you on this side of the court. I mean, everything is tracked, everything. And so every team and coaching staff knows the littlest nuance. The thing is, you might think defense is worse today because we have 125 to 120 games, but you just can't do as much defensively in terms of physicality. But the actual tendencies defensively are not worse. It's way more max effort defensively now than it was 30 years ago. And also remember, you never had to guard the three-point arc the way that you've got to guard it now. I mean, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, you just didn't have these guys bombing away the way that they do now. And so you have to cover more ground. So it's not that defense is underemphasized at all. The Golden State Warriors were the best defensive team in basketball, which is hard to imagine, but they were. It's not that it's underemphasized. It's just that you could get a lot of guys to play the same amount of defense. You can't get a lot of guys that can score like Kevin Durant or LeBron James or Steph Curry or pick your poison. But I will say the Cavaliers were terrible defensively, and that came back to bite them in the finals. No doubt about it. When we come back, another athlete finds out the hard way about bankruptcy, and it almost drove him to murder. DA, CBS Sports Radio. Experience the legendary Iron Maiden in all of their glory on their Book of Souls 2017 tour. It's a spectacular live show you don't want to miss. Get your tickets at livenation.com. Glad you're with us. Remember, you can watch the web stream. You can watch the digital broadcast right here of the show at watchda.com on a daily basis. Check it out. It's also mobile friendly. I'm officially weirded out because we were just talking about gross bathrooms the other day. Remember, Mraz, you were talking about how terrible the Penn Station bathrooms are?
Just brutal.
How about somebody missing in a Walmart for 3 days? Found in the bathroom.
Alive?
And no.
I am the epic fail.
Oh, I didn't see this having a dark ending.
Police in Oklahoma investigating a 29-year-old woman's body discovered in the bathroom of a Walmart 3 days after she went into the store. She walked into the store, Oklahoma Walmart, at about dinner time on Friday. An employee, I guess this is around Tulsa, tried to get into the family bathroom on Friday, but it was locked. At that point, the employee placed an out-of-order sign on the door.
Yeah, you know what? Employee of the month.
Several days later, employees checked again and discovered the body. Not immediately known the cause of death. Investigators say her death does not appear to be suspicious. She may have died from a health condition. They are waiting to figure this out. So this is really creeping me out because how often do you go into a Walmart, a Target, a major superstore, a mall, a Best Buy. Pick huge public space with a public bathroom and a sign says out of order or the door is locked and it feels like nobody's been in there for a while. How often do you see this? And now we know that there could be One-Eyed Willie behind that door.
This is amazing, and it really takes me back to my Subway days, because anytime there was a bathroom problem or something was locked, I was the place the out-of-order sign guy, and then I know I would forget that I placed that sign, not actually call anybody who could handle that situation, either fix the bathroom or unlock the bathroom. Days could go by. Oh, I forgot to do that last Tuesday. Well, it's still out of order. Did you let anybody know? Nah, it slipped my mind. Bam, dead body.
Exactly. Imagine what a Walmart bathroom with little to no ventilation anyway smells like, and then what it smells like 3 days later after a corpse is in there.
It's terrible. Terrible tragedy.
So I'm totally creeped out, man. Totally creeped out, because you see this all the time. Bathrooms out of order. Signs are on there. Do not enter. This or that. As I was just saying, here in New York City, in the tunnels, the Byzantine tunnels of the subway, all over the place, there's old, wretched, gross bathrooms with padlocks on them so that people can't use them anymore. They were used 70 years ago, and you can't use them. How many dead hobos are in there?
All I know is whoever was handling that bathroom in Tulsa, I hope they only use one paper towel to get the body out of there.
You know, I would waive my one paper towel rule there.
Yeah, I would hope.
I would wave it.
We're not worried about going green there.
I would wave it there. Under that circumstance, I would wave it. So Clinton Portis, boy, this is a real depressing segment. Clinton Portis went bankrupt, thought about killing somebody. Boy, I should really turn this up a little. How do I get this back on track to smiles? Smiles, everyone! Clinton Portis earned a lot of money as a football player, obviously. But when he retired, he had invested in some, or had given his money to some fraudulent investors. He didn't really know what he was doing. And this is a really sad story done by SI, but it's in the Where Are They Now, which is interesting because we just did the story about Where Are They Now with Vince Young and his comments about Jeff Fisher. But Clinton Portis had made about $43 or $45 million over the course of his nine-year NFL career. But he had blown through a lot of money buying cars and houses and clothes and partying and all of this type of stuff. And then what he had left over after his career, or nearing the end of his career, he had given to those that said they were investors. They were financial advisors, okay? And one of them was a financial advisor who had a stint at Stratton Oakmont, which is the infamous firm in Wolf of Wall Street. So he had run into that guy. And so that guy is really well-dressed. That guy is speaking a mile a minute. That guy might have been on copious amounts of cocaine, knowing Wolf of Wall Street. Either way, he convinces Clinton Portis, hey man, I've got it all covered. Invest with me, and I got you. I'll make you rich. And he's obviously saying all the right things. He works near Wall Street or on Wall Street or whatever. He's this big, fancy, you know, investment banker or whatever. And Clinton Portis believes him. So Clinton Portis gives him a couple of $1 million. And this guy and then another guy, his cohort, end up using the money, telling Clinton Portis they're going to invest in a Southern Alabama casino. And then local authorities end up realizing the casino is a fugazi operation, didn't have state regulations on it. They shut it down, so all that money is done. All that money that he invested in a Southern Mississippi casino is done. Also, one of these investors started making withdrawals from Clinton Portis's bank accounts without Clinton Portis's knowledge. So all the money he's already invested in this casino goes down the drain. And this guy is also draining his bank account from other ways. And one of the casino managers apparently has Clinton Portis's bank account stuff and starts draining it from there as well and giving money to other employees at the casino. So basically, Clinton Port is just getting destroyed, and he has no idea that it's going on. Apparently, they bled from him $14 million or something like that. And then Clinton Portis was basically broke because this was supposed to be his nest egg. This was supposed to be his investments. And he was terrible, terrible at also saving any money outside of that. So he ripped through his own $35 million. And then the other 15 was bled dry by these guys. Clinton Portis is so upset. He's so frustrated. He ends up taking a loaded gun and sitting in a parking lot waiting for these guys to exit their office. And he's sitting there in the dark going, when these guys come out, I am going to kill them. And Clinton Portis admits, now, he wasn't talking about beating them up, wasn't talking about teaching them a lesson, says, I'm going to kill them. I'm going here to murder them. Well, somebody that he has worked with is also a counselor slash therapist who became a friend of his. I guess he calls this person to let them know this is what's going to happen. Let the kids know they're going to be okay, but daddy's going to go away for a while because he's planning to kill this guy or both these guys. And this counselor friend talks him off the ledge and says, don't do that. You'll have four kids without their dad around. It'll only make things worse. I know you've lost everything, but don't lose your freedom as well. Talks him off the ledge, and Clinton Portis walks away. So, thankfully, Portis is in a better state of mind now, but he's also broke and is trying to get, like, a broadcasting career going, but it's not really taking off, so he doesn't have a lot of income right now, but he's trying to make some money off of his likeness. What Clinton Portis says is, if you're an athlete, don't trust people that you can't understand. He goes, my problem was I didn't know anything about finance. This guy comes in talking a mile a minute, and I go, yeah, that sounds right because I don't know what you're talking about. He says, just put it in a bank. Just put it in a bank. Do not trust these guys. Now, I got to say, if I'm 22 years old, and whether I'm coming from the hood, whether I'm coming from the sticks, whether I'm coming from middle-class family, working-class family, lower-class family, whatever, I know exactly what he's talking about because I will talk to my accountant once a year around tax time and I go, I can't even keep up with this. And we're just talking about my taxes. You know, so when I hear people talk finance, one of my best friends from college is in finance. He starts telling me stuff. I go, you got to slow down. I don't know any of this, these words, this vocabulary, this is not English to me. What do you mean? Now, I don't consider myself a dummy. I mean, I know that we didn't have Thanksgiving because of Columbus. I know that that Egyptian is not spoken in Brazil. But I also have no idea if you told me this, that, this goes to this count, this goes to that count, you'll make money here. Like, that's how Madoff screws up millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires that are supposed to be hip to this type of stuff. I think people just talk a mile a minute. It sounds really good. And you go, yeah, that sounds right. They must know what they're talking about. Like if Clinton Portis walked in here and he spoke a mile a minute about X's and O's of ZY, banana X, stretch on 3, go 4, zip recruiter on 2. And he's like, this play works for a touchdown as long as the safety moves over here to cover the tight end out of the backfield. Be like, that sounds right. Everything he says could be a lie. And he knows that's just like a way to say it's a punt formation. Everything he says could be a lie. It's like, that's not even a play. And I just believe it. And that's exactly what happens with these athletes, with financial guys. It sounds good. So you just go, yeah, I mean, you know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. So let's do it. And I think it's just so vital in everything. We all have this money, whether it's a little or a lot, whether you're a normal person or an athlete, that you're like, well, I mean, I don't know what to do. But I know other people know what to do, so I'll listen to other people. We all do that. Everybody, at every walk of life. Like, it could be your uncle. It's like, I got a stock tip for you. Like, I remember once asking my uncle how Ameritrade works at Easter one day. I mean, within 30 seconds, my eyes glazed over. I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm going to go away, Uncle John. I don't know. Sorry. You're talking to the sixth grade level, and I'm a kindergartner right now. I have no idea what you're talking about. So in a lot of ways, I empathize with Clinton Portis and a lot of these guys, man. But look, here's the deal. For the rest of us, it's $100 here, it's $500 there, it's $50 here. For those guys, it's $15 million. And when it's $15 million, yeah, man, just let the banks do your work for you, because at least that's insured. Because that's insane. It's sad. It's also insane. Like, could you imagine? You come out of a broken home, you come out of a lower class situation, you have no management money skills at all. That's why I really believe that colleges should just give you, or high schools, money management. Like, every college should have this as their first course, so that even if you drop out after a semester, you kind of know how a mortgage works, you kind of know how interest rates work, you kind of know how a savings account works or a checking account, how you kind of know what your Roth IRA could be. Like, I have no idea still about any of this stuff. And I went to 4 years of college. It's amazing. There should be a Life 101 class. Like, okay, today we learn about mortgages, so that you don't have to learn about it the day that you want to buy a house. Today we learn about investment, so that you don't figure this out after you've been bled dry. When we come back, your cut line, the stories that don't make the cut, and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
I think Outside the Cage is doing, they pulled them as well. Which, if Ike Feldman's making a decision to pull promos, what does that tell you?
So this is amazing. It's like the summer of George. It's the summer of DA. Everybody in New York that listens to the live stream knows me, hates my guts, wants to kill me. And you should see the tweets. They are so mean. It's getting vicious.
Download the PGP today on iTunes and play.it. Or listen at DA on CBS.com and the show's Facebook page, Zaps.
If you've been following me on Twitter, you have seen the saga. Promos for this show running incessantly on WFAN's live stream. And so those listeners are none too pleased with me. But it's become very entertaining. Tomorrow, Brian Urlacher is going to join us in studio, which is good because we got two bald guys that work on this show. Mraz and the Body Bilotti. Maybe we should ask, what do you do about being bald? Urlacher went bald and had the hair replanted back in, right? Isn't that what he did?
Yes, something like that. So yeah, maybe I'm not bald the rest of my life. Maybe tomorrow Brian Urlacher changes my life forever.
You know, you're married already, and Danielle likes the bald head, right?
Yeah, she was creeped out at first, but she definitely likes it better than the Homer Simpson strands, which I had in the early days of the DA show.
Does she ever say, I wish you had your hair back from high school?
No, I think she thinks if I had hair, I don't have hair, I'd be as ugly as anything anyway.
Yeah. So she never wants to rub her fingers through your luscious locks.
No. To be honest, she never wants to rub my back either. I think she's just, I don't know.
Tired of you.
Very tired of me. I think I'm just there. I'm like a lamp.
So didn't you employ her, though, to shave all your back hair?
Yes. She actually gave me a fresh back shave last week as well for the beach.
So she likes that.
Yeah, she definitely likes a smooth back. More, I don't know if she necessarily likes the feel of a smooth back, but doesn't want to be seen in public with me with a hairy back.
Oh, interesting. So I thought this was something that she liked to do. It was kind of like a something that's kind of cute and cuddly, like this is what you guys do together. But more.
No, it's more to save her the embarrassment.
I see.
Yeah, I think it's great. As I said, I purr like a walrus every time I feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, maybe we can work with Brian Urlacher tomorrow and get on that. Let's see how we can get the hair back. Let's get also for you guys your cut line this morning.
These stories were left out by the selection committee.
You knew about this and you didn't tell me?
Cut from their high school team. The news that didn't make the show.
We can't keep you all here.
I'm no longer on the team?
It's the cut line.
Everybody on that line. Somebody's going to get hurt.
2 years ago, Carlos Williams had a nice rookie campaign for the Buffalo Bills. 2 years later, he's out of work and suspended for a year. According to Field Yates of ESPN, Carlos Williams is gone for the entire season. No specifications on what the suspension is for, but likely related to his last ban. Last November, he was suspended 10 games for substance abuse policy. He was a fifth-round pick for the Bills in 2015. He rushed for 517 yards and 7 touchdowns. He was a nice 1-2 punch for the Bills, but hasn't played in an NFL game since. Williams was suspended for the first 4 games of last year, and then the Bills cut him. Before that happened, he was already under scrutiny for arriving to the Bills minicamp 20 pounds overweight. He blamed it on the injury of pregnancy. What he meant by that was his wife was pregnant, so he ate a lot of food that she had around the house. He said, I like to eat, but her being pregnant gave me an excuse to eat, so I ate anything and everything. She'd wake up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and say, I want a snack. Sounds like Rex Ryan. He said, I'm not going to sit there and watch you eat because I don't want you to feel bad, but it's back to football. She's going to get back to working out herself, so kind of motivating each other, feeding off each other's energy, getting ready for camp. That was his excuse, that I got fat because my wife was pregnant and I wanted to eat with her. Now he's out of work and suspended for a full year. I don't know, man. If you got to connect the dots, this guy's probably smoking a lot of weed and eating a lot of bad 7-Eleven food.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
What an amazing story out of Pittsburgh. An amazing, amazing story. We get on umpires all the time. We get on umps for being blind, for not doing their job well, for balls and strikes being a disaster and all of that. But how about an ump that actually saved a woman's life? This is an amazing story. He actually saw a woman, an umpire that was working the Pirates game, saw a woman, John Trumpain, saw a woman looking to jump from the Roberto Clemente Bridge. And this is the bridge, obviously, that is right next to the stadium, connecting the stadium and downtown. I've walked over that bridge. It's beautiful. You see it in the background when you watch the Pirates games. He saw a woman looking to jump. So he went over to her and tried to help her. And she said, let me go. I don't want to be here. I want to be in a better place. And he would not let go of her. She tried to struggle from his grasp and make the jump. And instead, he bear hugged her and would not let her out of his grasp to the point where she was dangling from the bridge, both feet in the air. And Trumpain actually was able to hold her up and drag her back onto the bridge. He mouthed to a passerby, call 911. Finally, the authorities came and this woman was saved. I mean, MLB umpire John Trumpain is a hero. He's amazing. And it just goes to show you, man. I mean, it's easy to trash umps and referees, but there are some good people out there. And it's kind of perfect that this would be an umpire who's supposed to call the fairness of a sporting event. This is supposed to be a guy that's above the fray. And he ends up saving a person's life. Just amazing.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Elsewhere in baseball, Tim Tebow promoted to high A after hitting just 222 with 3 home runs in low A. But in his first game in high A, he hits a home run with the St. Lucie Mets. And I don't mean with the fans and the ladies. Actually hits a home run. And this is kind of the Tim Tebow way. Remember, he hit 2 home runs very early in his low A tenure and then went basically the rest of the season without hitting a home run except for once. So I saw this tweet from, I think it was David Schoenfeld from ESPN, saying, I guess Tebow just rises to the occasion, which feels to me like a real oversimplification. If Tebow always rose to the occasion, he would hit a home run almost every at bat. He wouldn't hit 220. He wouldn't have 1 billion strikeouts. If Tim Tebow rose the occasion, he would have had better numbers at low A. But what's going to end up happening is, I think, Pitchers don't have a book on him yet at that level. Maybe guys are trying to challenge him because it's Tim Tebow early. He's just swinging for the fences every time. Hits a home run, and then they get a book, and maybe they don't challenge him as much. They don't say, I'm going to blow my best stuff right by Tim Tebow. They start pitching him smarter, and then he can't hit anything again. You know? I think that's what's funny here. It's like, yeah, Tebow, everywhere he goes, he hits home runs. My guess is this will be his last home run for a long time.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And that's your cut line this morning. Sign up to be an O Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O Rewards members earn $5 back for every 150 points you earn. Fast, easy, free, only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Not to make this about me, but you know when, like, Facebook does the 5 years ago, you were doing this. 7 years ago, you were doing this. And sometimes you're like, that's awesome. And then sometimes you're like, oh, God, that's a terrible picture. I don't look like that anymore. Oh, I'm embarrassed. Well, NFL Films is doing a top 10 marathon, and right now is an episode from their first season, Top 10 Gunslingers. And I just saw me, and it's really embarrassing because I don't look like that anymore. My hair was all over the place.
Is that the old hair in front of your forehead deal?
No, it was, you know, I was working in Miami, so I had my hair like blown out like South Beach. And it's just, it's a wild scene, man. And I look at that, and I just look like a total mess. Just look like a total embarrassing mess. And they never stop running this. So basically, my life is like when Facebook reminds you of your events from 7 years ago, except mine is on NFL Network when they need to fill programming. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And in your epic fail, we once again learn history and geography from Mraz.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
I would say the Aaron Rodgers more heartbreaking because I expect this out of DA. Mm. You know, simple mind. Mm. Aaron Rodgers, I expected more out of.
Simple mind.
Signed the guy that thought Christopher Columbus was a pilgrim.
Still think he was, but, you know, that's debatable.
Definitely not debatable. One of those things that's not debatable.
Well, then he didn't discover America because the pilgrims did. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Thanksgiving. So we got to pick one here. Did he discover America or not?
He did.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And the pilgrims did not. But the pilgrims did start Thanksgiving.
Well, we started Thanksgiving because America was discovered. So we can't have it both ways here.
We can.
Definitely can.
Yep. Can't.
You're definitely mixing up your historical anecdotes here.
I know Magellan sailed the world. I got that.
We don't have Thanksgiving because we discovered the new world.
Yeah, well, it was all about giving and sharing. We're gonna take a little lamb, we're gonna show an appreciation, everybody's gonna come together. This is America, we've discovered it, and now here's some turkey and some coleslaw.
Love to eat the turkey like a good boy, sure.
Yeah, you realize that's like 200 years separated the first Thanksgiving from when we discovered the New World or when Columbus landed.
So what? Let me ask you this. What did they do on the last Thursday in November then for those 200 years? What'd they do?
He got us.
Yeah. What did we do? What in the colony of Jamestown, what did we do in 1510 on the final Thursday of every November? I mean,
all right.
Were the Native Americans not playing box lacrosse on Fox at that point?
No, and I don't think the next morning everybody was lined up at the doors of small businesses.
Black Friday in Jamestown. Don't get your deals, your cyber deals on lumber and oats.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Come on, Ma. Come on, Pa. Let's go down to the market. Black Friday. We're going to raise a school on Monday. We got to go get our deals on lumber. I think there's half off churned butter. We might even get refrigerated vegetables while we're there. It's amazing. 70% off musket powder. These deals are outrageous. all the pilgrims storming these stores, the general store in Jamestown. Out of my way! Out of my way! I need the gunpowder! You never know what you're going to learn listening to the show. Tomorrow, Brian Urlacher is going to join us in studio, and we will have a junk food doctor. That may be good for the show. It might be terrible for the show. I don't know.
Puffiness with sodium.
We like to promote eating unhealthy things here on the show because we like to eat unhealthy things, unfortunately. So I'm not sure if that doctor is going to make us feel really bad about living, but I'm going to play for him this a lot.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
And just see what he says. That'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Ben Horowitz on the Wheels of Steel. Andrew Kaplan is your digital broadcast producer. And our friend Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Be good. Be good to one another. And check us out on iTunes and at watchda.com. The Mothership Disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.